Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
And welcome back to Overnight America. Thank you for joining us tonight. Yes, there was another debate tonight. Did you even know? There's so many of them in Los Angeles, California. They started early and they ended late. Joining us now to recap what happened, our friend Rich Rubino in his book, American Politics on the Rocks. You normally hear him Mondays. It's good to have him on a Thursday night. Thank you for joining us, Rich.
Sure, Ryan.
Quick two questions. First question, are you watching CNN's coverage or are you watching PBS?
I was watching CNN.
Okay. Is that Nancy Grace they have on the panel?
I'm not watching it right this minute.
Okay. I was shocked. I said, that kind of looks like her, but maybe she lost a bunch of weight. And I'm thinking, why is Nancy Grace on with them for the post-debate? It might not be her, but it looks an awful lot like her. I was just curious if that was it. Number two, they posted this on the bottom, and right now it says, breaking news, Dems debate less than 7 weeks before first vote. Is it really 7 weeks away?
Believe it or not, that's when the Iowa caucuses occur, yes.
Wow, I can't believe that. And question number three, why did they go so long? Did they really have to go 2.5 hours? Was it action-packed?
You know, I don't think so. I think that there was one debate that was about 2 hours long. I think 2 hours was probably enough political oxygen, the attention span of the average voter. There are political junkies that probably would rather it go 4 or 5 hours, but I think people kind of tune in and out of it. For the 3 hour increments. But I also think a lot of people aren't watching it live. They're going to get, if it's 3 hours, maybe you're going to get 30 second soundbite tomorrow. And that's going to be a lot of people's perception of the debate, as opposed to people just sit there and watch it for 2.5 full hours,
Yeah. And I only heard a little bit how CBS radio covered it at the top of the hour. And they said, was it the one clip they played, Elizabeth Warren saying something about in a wine cellar, a bunch of billionaires in a wine cellar.
Yes, that was actually, and it was actually, I guess it's really worked for her because, one thing in a debate, you're trying to get two or three messages out. People aren't going to remember what you say about every policy prescription. But she was trying to talk about Pete Buttigieg, the mayor of South Bend, and saying that he had literally had a fundraiser in a wine cellar. And she was going after him about it, saying essentially, you have billionaires that are supporting you, and how are you going to represent the average person? And Pete Buttigieg comes back and talks. He says he had a really good comeback for it. His retort was, I'm the only person on this stage who's actually not a millionaire or a billionaire. And she kind of, he looked back at Elizabeth Warren, and he says, a lot of the money that you're taking, you say you're not taking money from millionaires and billionaires, but you're basically taking some money out of that you've had in your past Senate campaign, and you're using it, so you're kind of getting through a certain loophole, I guess, was what he was going after there. But it was interesting because Bernie Sanders then chimed in and tried that, Pete, you actually haven't taken enough money from, you've actually taken just as, take less money from billionaires than Joe Biden has. He said that's something maybe you'll be able to catch up to, kind of in a condescending way. But it was a pretty good retort for what he was saying. But you know what? People are now, I'm sure that that's going to probably be the most searched Google and Bing the next couple of days is going to be, what is this wine cellar and why is Pete Buttigieg and then identified with it? If I was Elizabeth Warren, I'd come up with some sort of a nickname like Wine Cellar Pete or Pete the Wino or something like that.
Ah, Pete the Wino. I like that. Well, there's got to be something along those lines. Who's really good at that is Donald Trump. So who knows? Maybe he's tweeted since we've last started the interview and there could be something out there for it. So altogether, there were seven people that made the stage. Joe Biden, Pete Buttigieg, Amy Klobuchar, Bernie Sanders, Tom Steyer, Elizabeth Warren, Andrew Yang. Now, there were some that were missing, some of them notable. Michael Bloomberg didn't make it. I'm kind of surprised by that. Cory Booker wasn't there. Julian Castro wasn't there. Tulsi Gabbard wasn't there either. So it's starting to narrow down. How did the seven that made the stage tonight, who do you think were some of the people that stood out?
I think that there were two of them. And one of them, interestingly, was Andrew Yang. Andrew Yang was the candidate who I think in the beginning of the race people thought of as kind of an outlier, somebody who probably wouldn't make the debate stage. But he comes on, and you know, he was talking about Donald Trump, and he basically made the case that Donald Trump did not get elected president because it was some sort of a conspiracy with the Russians. And then he started talking about how part of it was, and I think, you know, he's right on this, he talked about the hemorrhaging of manufacturing jobs, and he talked about how the Democratic Party essentially needs to ameliorate certain issues, and they need to figure out why it was in the first place that Donald Trump got elected. And he got a uproarious applause for that. And it's interesting because he was the guy, he's kind of like Larry Agron, for example. There was a mayor of Irvine, California, who ran back in 1992. At the beginning of the race, no one thought he was going to get anywhere, but then by January of that year, you know, there are polls showing him tied with Tom Harkin, the senator from Iowa, and Jerry Brown, the former governor of California. But he made quite an impact. The other one, I thought, was in terms of talking about a general election strategy, and no pun intended, to most folks in the Democratic Party, electability, being Donald Trump, trumps any sort of ideological litmus test. And Amy Klobuchar, you know, I've always said that I think she's going to be the up-and-comer, the John Edwards of this race. John Edwards back in 2004, he was pulling about 5 or 6% the last couple of weeks. He came up and ended up finishing second in Iowa. She had a great message, and it really, I think, struck a resonant chord probably with a lot of independent voters and more conservative Democrats when, first of all, she talks about how she comes from Minnesota and how it should not be treated as flyover country, which is a pretty good message because a lot of these people that she's running against were from the coast, and she knows that Donald Trump is just salivating. He's just salivating at going after the coastal elite. But she says, you know, I'm from flyover country. We have to win in the flyover country. She talks about how she won rural congressional districts in Minnesota, how she won by 18 points, for example, her reelection bid. And it was a time when Pete Buttigieg was talking about how he had been elected in Indiana. And then, you know, I was talking about he had been elected, too, in flyover country. And she had a great retort. She said, well, that would be great if you were actually elected in Indiana, but you were elected in South Bend, which is one city in Indiana, mm-hmm. and you actually ran for treasurer of Indiana, and you lost by 20 points the one time you ran statewide. So I thought she had some great lines, and I thought she – I really think she's going to be the one person. She's really spending a lot of time in Iowa. She's going to all 99 counties, which is obviously going to be which probably will be obliterated toward the end of the campaign there because she's going to have to be there for the actual impeachment debate. But she's going to a lot of these places, and she's making the case that, you know, I may not be your favorite candidate, but I'm electable, and I'm the pragmatic progressive, I guess.
Oh, that's interesting. Joining us here tonight live is our friend Rich Rubino. And again, if people wanted to look you up online, your book is American Politics on the Rocks, but they can also find you where?
www.polita-geek.com or just go to Rich Rubino on Facebook.
So did they even mention this whole crossing the line deal during the debate, or was that just something that they swept under the rug?
The crossing picket, the line deal?
Not the picket lines, but with the unions.
That's ancient history now.
Ancient history.
Yeah, that's right there with the Battle of Hastings, I think, now.
I know, it's so long ago. So many things had happened since then. You know, I look at some of the other candidates that were up there, and the way that they handle these things. I'm going to give one observation, and I'm going to see if, because again, I was just, had this on mute, it was on in the background. Did it seem like the moderators were really close to the candidates this time? It seemed like their desk was like right up there.
Yes. I think it was a very small stage. It seemed very close, and you know, you could see also the people right behind him. There was one guy with a beard mustache that I kept being, you know, fixated on because he just, you know, because of the kind of the look that he was giving, but everyone seemed very condensed.
Yeah. Were you surprised Michael Bloomberg didn't have the amount of whatever? I don't know what he was missing, if it was the total individual in.
Yeah, he didn't have that yet. No, because he came into the race so late.
Yeah.
You know, but you know what, though? His strategy, which is interesting, his strategy is he's going to ignore the first four states anyways. So all the publicity he's going to get, I mean, his clarion call, his strategy is essentially that Iowa, New Hampshire, South Carolina, and Nevada are all going to get split. Someone's going to win each one of them. Then you go to Super Tuesday, and then all the ads he's pouring into places like California, New York, that's when people are really going to start spending a lot of time paying attention to him. You know, maybe the best possible strategy for him is not to be mentioned and let everyone else go after each other and it becomes mutually assured destruction, and all of a sudden people are looking, they're saying, we need a fresh face.
Yeah.
And there's enter Michael Bloomberg stage right.
Do you mind holding on after the break? I have some more questions for you.
Absolutely.
Our friend Rich Rubino, make sure to check him out online, and you can do a search for Rich there. Google it, or if you go to Amazon, for example, you can look up American Politics on the Rocks. We'll talk more about the Democratic debate that happened tonight on Overnight America, KMOX.
St. Louis's weather station, KMOX.
Overnight America continues. Yeah, we're getting into the Christmas spirit. Less than a week away from Christmas next Wednesday. This is my last night of the year. So I'm going to be off all next week and all the week after. And I come back for one Thursday, January 2nd. And then I'm right back on weekend break. So almost 2 weeks off. Pretty excited for that. Joining us for the rest of this half hour, our friend Rich Rubino. He has his book, American Politics on the Rocks. You can check his blog out. Just do a Google search for him. Hey, Rich, thanks for sticking around.
Oh, you're welcome.
So I'm looking at CNN. They're in commercial break right now. I was kind of surprised. I didn't think CNN was going to broadcast this tonight. I thought it was just a PBS deal.
Yeah, no, I thought that as well. But I actually thought this was probably the most interesting debate.
Oh, okay.
In terms of the questions that were asked, I mean, there's some of the questions, they weren't necessarily traditional. I mean, you can pretty much tell what questions were asked in all these other debates. But it was interesting. I thought the most fascinating one was when they talked to Bernie Sanders, and he went after Joe Biden because Joe Biden had voted for the authorization of use of force in Iraq, and Bernie Sanders voted against it. Someone asked a great follow-up. They said, well, why did you vote for the war in Afghanistan, which he did? And Bernie Sanders answered, he said, well, you know, he actually mentioned Barbara Lee, the only member of the House of Representatives who voted against that resolution, and ended up having to have security detail because there were death threats to her. But he basically said, yeah, he said, I made a mistake on that. Mm-hmm. That was fascinating. He said on Afghanistan, he said, yeah, we all made mistakes on that. I thought that was a fascinating one. And also when they talked about Joe Biden, his answers to Iraq, and I mean to Afghanistan, rather, and he had a really dissension here from the Obama administration because he said that he was against basically the troop surge strategy in Afghanistan, and basically because he was asked by some, there were some recent articles saying that the country was misled in the last two administrations on the prosecution of the war in Afghanistan. He said that I wanted simply a counterterrorism strategy, but there were other members, including some in the Pentagon, like he brought up Robert Gates, the defense secretary, who was a holdover from George W. Bush administration, who didn't want that necessarily, who instead of a kind of terrorism strategy, wanted to expand, you know, kind of increase kind of into, I guess you could say, to win the hearts and minds of Afghanistan, which did not work.
Mm. You know, looking at what happened tonight, can you go through some of the other interesting questions that came up?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of interesting questions, I think toward the end, there was a fascinating question they asked, you know, what would you either give a gift of somebody or what would you apologize for, which is kind of an interesting question. Yeah. Andrew Yang was the first person to answer, and he was really kind of stumbled upon it, and then finally he ended up promoting his book, which is probably a great place to do it. He said, I would give everyone my book because it talks about how to restructure the economy. But there was actually kind of, I guess it was similar. Remember in 2008, after Hillary Clinton lost the Iowa caucuses and people thought her campaign was essentially dead as a doornail, she was asked a question about how you go on. And she almost, it appeared that she was crying and saying she just wants her country to go ahead. And she landed up surprising everybody, and she landed up winning in New Hampshire after that, and landed up, you know, she didn't win the nomination, but her campaign, you know, got more legs because people saw a different side of Hillary Clinton. Mm-hmm. Elizabeth Warren's case, you know, she started talking about how she, when it's true, in all of her campaign appearances, she has a selfie line, and anybody in the audience can get up there that was willing to spend, you know, an hour or so to wait and can get to take a selfie with her. And people are saying, oh, you know, you said she's showing off the fact she does selfies, she's trying to be like an average person. But then she comes on and she kind of almost teared up, and she was talking about specific instances where, for example, people had, you know, three members of a family had decided how they're going to ration insulin, how they're going to ration pills, that type of thing, and talks about how it really affected her. And, you know, I think that's something that really, it shows kind of an emotional side of Elizabeth Warren as opposed to somebody that I think a lot of people see her as more of kind of technocratic and sometimes somebody who I think is not necessarily seen as being that emotional. I think that was probably the most thing that probably is probably going to benefit her as well as going after people to judge for the wine cave.
Uh-huh. Did Bernie Sanders say his famous line, yeah, I wrote the bill, I know what's in it. Did he do any of that tonight?
No. He did have something, though, that I think the fact that Tulsi Gabbard was not there, I think on issues like foreign policy, I think that there may be, I think the issue Bernie Sanders has is two people that are probably two of his allies are potentially siphoning votes from him. One of them is Tulsi Gabbard, because Tulsi Gabbard is starring foreign policy and her non-interventionism in foreign policy. and Andrew Yang, because Andrew Yang's idea of having essentially a united basic income, of giving every adult $1,000, is probably taking off certain positions that Sanders had as well. When it came to foreign policy, and they asked about Israel, Sanders said we need to be pro-Israel, but we also need to be pro-Palestinian, and mentioned the fact that 60% of young Palestinians, for example, were unemployed. He got an uproarious applause for that. And the average American might say, well, who's necessarily caring about this? But there's a lot of particularly young activists, young members of the Democratic Party, young progressives, who that has almost become a flagship issue. And he's one of the only candidates who actually directly talks about the Palestinians' plight. It then went to Pete Buttigieg, and his answer, he was talking about how the United States had taken the wrong policy on Israel and had also taken the wrong policy on foreign policy generally. Then it came to Joe Biden, and Biden started to actually criticize the Trump administration's policy in the Middle East and saying that everyone knows there should be a two-state solution. The other thing that he did, which I think will help him consolidate some of these young progressives, is he said basically the country is an oligarchy, meaning the rule of the wealthy few. And he talks about how the income inequality is at the highest level since the 1920s. That's something that a lot of people who are, I think, disaffected with the system, that's one of the reasons they basically think that it isn't, that the country is an oligarchy and it is controlled by the wealthy. And this is something that Sanders addresses directly in this debate.
Rich Rubino joining us here on Overnight America. You know, Joe Biden still looked at as the front runner, at least nationwide. How did he handle himself tonight?
I think this was probably his best performance, not because of anything he said substantively, with perhaps one exception. There was one instance where they asked, he said, because this is one of the arguments that people think about Joe Biden, that Joe Biden is going to go back to the status quo ante, meaning the status quo before the status quo. And that for some, that means, oh, well, he's just going to be another status quo politician. They would say it's going to be just like the Bushes, the Obamas, the Clintons, Bernie Sanders might say we're going to go back to the oligarchy, but no, he said we're not going back. He says essentially we're going forward, and talked about positions that he thinks he can get health care through, how he thinks he can actually work with Republicans. And then he said, you know, I should be the one that's probably least likely to work with Republicans, the way they treated my son and the way they treated me. But he says we have to work with Republicans, and he said if we don't, then essentially we're going to have to go in 2022, and we're going to have to win the House and the Senate, and then we're going to have to take over that way. And he's going to go out campaigning, which is extremely hard because, generally speaking, in a midterm election, particularly the first midterm election, the president's party almost invariably loses seats. George W. Bush won seats actually in 2002 after the Iraq War, and that was the first time that's happened actually since Franklin Roosevelt in 1934. So this very rarely happens. And the other thing he said, if you elect me, if I become the nominee, he's essentially, I can win, I can have coattails. And it's interesting because Amy Klobuchar said this too, because they can appeal to certain moderate voters, and that can potentially win over the Senate in places in swing states this time around, in places like Arizona and North Carolina. It's an interesting argument for Biden, but if people are saying, you know, if we really want to take over this whole thing, maybe we have to elect Joe Biden, even though he's potentially not our first choice. But he can be electable and can potentially win over the Senate, and then you'd have the Senate and the House, and then he gets some of his plans through, even though they're not as progressive as, say, Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders.
Did anyone ask to see his hairy legs?
No, but I'm sure there are people on the Twitter sphere who are probably bringing that up. This was his relationship with Corn Pop, and if you don't know what they're talking about there, yeah.
All right, any talk about Donald Trump tonight?
You know, it was interesting. They bring up the issue of impeachment, and basically everyone said that they were for impeachment. But I thought the best answer to that, again, was Andrew Yang's answer when he said it, that essentially he almost made the case that Trump is a symptom of disaffected Americans who are just looking to take a wrecking ball. And this is my words, not his, but are just looking to say taking wrecking ball to the entire system. And he says, we have to win these people back. And he talked about specifically the loss of manufacturing jobs, and he also mentioned something else, which he talked about the media, and he says people don't know where the truth is anymore because there's so many different media sources. So he says people are just going to sources that they kind of agree with, so he talked about unity in that respect. It was a very interesting message. It's something that I think can potentially appeal to some disaffected Republicans as well as independents and progressives as well. He has an interesting message, in part because he's someone that really just came out of absolutely nowhere, as did Buttigieg, by the way. These were two people who I don't think anybody – you know, I always bring the example back in 1974, they took a Harris poll, and they asked who the top 35 Democratic presidential candidates would be. Jimmy Carter, the outgoing at the time governor of Georgia, his name was never even mentioned in that. Mm. That he landed up, he outworked everybody and landed up garnering the nomination. People just could not believe it. Very similar with people like Buttigieg and Andrew Yang. They have a message that seems to be resonating. Would have been no one's radar screen a year ago. Now they're people that actually are in the top five and the top six. It's really quite extraordinary.
Wow. Do you dig the no-tie look for Andrew Yang?
Yes, absolutely.
It works.
You know, it raises the question, why do we wear ties in the first place? I wonder this all the time. What benefit do they actually have to the human being?
There is none. You're right.
They just sit there. They don't, I can see wearing shoes. You know, you have to wear it with your feet, particularly if there's ice on there. But where do these ties actually benefit us? It's like there's some sort of tradition going back to the 1600s, and somehow we today, I mean, I do too, but somehow we today are still following this, but I don't see what the point of a tie is in the first place.
I know.
Maybe this is revolutionary in a sense.
Rich Rubino again.
But I'm waiting for the next prime. I'm waiting. What would really stand out is if, say, Tom Steyer came in a Marilyn Manson shirt.
Face paint instead of makeup, yeah.
With the word Thug Life on the top of on their forehead. If one of the candidates did that, it would get a lot of attention.
Or on his knuckles, that. He shows it up, Thug Life. Rich Rubino, your book's American Politics on the Rocks. If they wanted to look you up online, where can they find you?
Just go to www.politigeek.com or just find me on Facebook.
Politi-Geek?
Politi-Geek, yes.
Yeah, Rich Rubino, thank you so much for spending time with us. And, you know, I'm off the next couple of Mondays for vacation. I guess we'll check in the new year.
Yes, absolutely. And I think a lot of the candidates will be spending their time crisscrossing Iowa, especially the ones that are running for president, because they're going to have to, believe it or not, they're actually going to have to show up to the Senate for a while. If you can believe this, they're actually going to do what they're being paid to do.
Oh, poor, poor, poor candidates. All right, thanks, Rich.
Thanks. Thank you.
Hey, that's our friend Rich Rubino. Coming up next, we also will check in with Kristen Arnold. She's a rules analyst. She'll give her take on how the moderators handled themselves, because we always want to look at, too, how the performance of the moderators were in the debates. It's Overnight America, KMOX.
News Radio 1120, KMOX, the voice of the Cardinals. Now back to Overnight America on KMOX, sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts, michaelsflooringoutlet.com.
The Democratic presidential debate was tonight. There were seven people on stage, but there were other people to look at from this debate outside of the candidates for the Democratic nomination. They are the moderators, and joining us now, rulesanalyst.com, an expert in panel moderation. We have been hooking up with her after the debate so far. Kristen Arnold, thank you for coming back on to KMOX.
Thanks, Ryan. Always good to chat with you.
I noticed a few things, and since it was going on, it was an early debate, too. So locally, what was it, 5 o'clock they started it in California?
So I'm in Arizona, so it was actually at 6.
6 your time, yeah. And I noticed one thing just popping it up on the TV, and I got to listen to none of it because it was on basically the same time I was on the air. I noticed that the moderators were up close and personal with the debaters tonight. It seems like they had that desk where the moderators sit was like 5 feet away from the actual candidates.
Yeah, so it was a little bit closer, a little bit more intimate. I mean, you only had 7 people when it could have been 10 or 12 or 24.
Yep, but they were nice and close. Well, altogether, it went about 2.5 hours. And how did you think PBS handled it?
So, I don't think it was much different than what we've seen before. The same rules applied. It was a minute and 15 seconds for a direct question, 45-minute rebuttal or a response. And you can't really get into a debate. And, in fact, these moderators were pretty controlled, just like the 5th Democratic debate. Mm-hmm. These guys were like, I'm going to ask you a question. I want you to answer it. And we're not really going to let you cross-pollinate with each other. There were very few questions where another person's name was not invoked. So you couldn't actually do a rebuttal until a couple of times there were some fireworks. Thank God, because mm-hmm. it was actually kind of boring in the first hour, wow. Ryan. I know you weren't listening to it, but I'm looking at my husband going, is this all they got?
So you say they put the blinders up. It was if, you know, you're on that long road trip and the kids are like, stop looking at my side of the car. You know, you're getting, everyone's getting impatient. So they weren't really interacting with each other much that first hour?
Not at all.
Wow. How about that? The questions in general, did it seem like they were leading them in a way where they wouldn't interact, or were they just being polite?
Well, the questions actually were very specific and kind of interesting questions, actually, but they were directed very specifically to a candidate, and then they would move on to something else. Mm-hmm. So, for example, Amna asked a question about cooperation with the Republicans specifically to Vice President Biden, mm-hmm. and said, you know, how would you be able to, you know, ensure that there's cooperation across the aisle? Of course, I'm paraphrasing that in my own language. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was kind of an interesting question. Like, that's going to be really important for the, you know, whoever's going to be president to try to heal the wounds of our nation, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And then after Biden answered it, it was like, okay, we're on to Yang, Andrew Yang, and we're going to talk about, you know, you're the only candidate of color standing here. And you're like, mm-hmm. what? I don't get it. I mean, and there were a couple of tussles in there. Mm-hmm. There were like two specifically. And they basically happened because each of the candidates mentioned the other candidates. And when you mention another candidate's name, you have to give them rebuttal time. Mm-hmm. But I think these moderators, if they could have just said, I'm just going to ask you questions and you're going to answer them, they would have been just happy.
Yeah. You know, who got the most time tonight when you start to break down? Because there's only seven on the stage, and it seems like they may have had more time than usual to try to spread it out.
Okay. So you know that I keep the time. So who do you think probably had the most time, even though you didn't watch it, Ryan.
Even though I didn't watch it, I'm going to guess Elizabeth Warren. And the only reason is because when I heard the CBS News update, the radio update we run here, she was the one that got all the clips at the top of the hour. So I'm going to guess Elizabeth Warren.
You know, actually, she is not even in the top two.
Whoa, that's a surprise. So who were the top two?
Okay, so here's what's really interesting. The top vote getter was Bernie Sanders.
Oh, okay.
And honestly, I was really shocked when I saw the stats and I went, he talked more? Mm-hmm. Like, but the data shows that he actually had like seven responses. He was asked nine questions, the most questions of anybody. And he had three rebuttals and seven responses, which gave him more airtime, mm-hmm. and he interrupted twice.
Oh, wow.
So that means he kind of went, I want to answer this one. So he actually was the top vote getter. And then I thought this was really interesting. Amy Klobuchar.
Whoa.
Is number two.
Now, she was normally towards the bottom of the pack the last couple of debates.
So I think she was very eloquent. She was very poised. She had some stories. She had some anecdotes. I think she actually, you know, not that I'm commenting on actually what candidates are saying, but I think she had a really good night. Mm-hmm. And she had a lot of airtime. She was only given five questions, but she had nine responses. Nine, Ryan. Mm-hmm. That is the most of anybody in the field.
Wow.
So what that means is that the moderators let her chime in. And there's actually a couple of times where she chimed in and she just kind of went, okay, let's be real here, folks. You know, we need to not let people come apart. We need to be together. So she was actually a very moderating influence.
Yeah. All right, so this is a weird question, but do you feel sometimes they may look at previous debates? Would the moderators say, well, this person hasn't been given much of a chance. America hasn't heard from this person. In the back of their mind, are they thinking, we're not going to let that happen? So maybe they gave her a little bit of an extra push when others wouldn't?
Well, if anybody should have gotten an extra push, it would have been Andrew Yang. Mm-hmm. Because he actually made a formal complaint to the DNC after the last the debate and yeah. said, you know what, I am chronically, I don't get as much airtime. You guys forget my name. And in fact, it was so frickin' embarrassing in that Judy Woodruff, who is an accomplished journalist, mm-hmm. of course she knows who these people are. She goes, and Mr. Yang, and she's looking at Tom Steyer.
yeah.
She is looking at him and directing the question, but she's saying, Mr. Yang, and like Andrew Yang is like going, hey, wait a minute, I'm over here.
Oh, no.
Oh, it was so embarrassing.
Oh, no. Well, at least during the MSNBC debates, the first one, when you saw the desk, they had like Rachel Maddow on them there. They had all the candidates' names with their picture just so they would avoid something embarrassing like that. I guess they didn't have
yeah.
those out this time. Okay, so if Bernie Sanders and Amy Klobuchar were one and two, who came in after that when it came to time?
So guess who had like a shocking amount of least amount of time?
Oh, I don't know. That's a good question. So, a shocking amount
Yang,
of least time.
So Yang was at the bottom.
Oh, okay.
Because he's a fringe candidate.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Steyer.
Okay.
Fringe candidate.
Uh-huh.
And then next, number three from the bottom, Joe Biden.
Really? Wow. They didn't give him much to work with, did they?
So everybody else, so like the top other four people, they within like 19 minutes of something. Biden's at like 15 and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, dude, you're not being very vocal here. And by all reports, people are like, Biden did a pretty good job. You know, because he didn't say as much.
Huh. So that's why people are going to look back at this and say, yeah, this was a good performance by Biden. He just kind of he found the parts where he would be able to resonate, and that's where he just stuck to it. He didn't try to go over that.
Yeah, and I don't think the moderators really pressed him too much.
Okay. Well, overall, if you had to grade their performance compared to the other Democratic debates we've seen so far and some of the other networks, where would you rank this performance for the moderators?
You know, now this is getting into an interesting comparison question.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that they were much more, I liked their questions. Mm-hmm. I thought their questions were really kind of quirky. There were some questions that I'm like, you know, should the U.S. boycott the 2022 Olympics in Beijing?
Oh, wow. That's an interesting question.
What?
Yeah.
Like, I would doubt that anybody prepped that one.
Yeah, and there was another one. We had a summary of what was going on with another guest we have on, Rich Rubino, and he mentioned there was a question about, you know, what gift would you give to someone or something like that took a lot of people off guard.
That's the humanizing question. And I really have a problem with these humanizing questions because mm-hmm. unless you kind of let people think about them a little bit, it was just awkward.
Yeah.
It was really awkward. What I thought was interesting is that two women said forgiveness and all the men said a gift, and they all twisted it into forgiveness and a gift to the American public versus your rivals.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And nobody called them on it and said, no, that's not what we meant. I mean, these are always really, really weird questions. And I get the whole point that it's supposed to humanize it. I thought they were closing statements. And then they said, and now we're going to take a break and go to closing statements. I'm like,
go for another
what?
Round. Yeah, keep her going, I guess. All right. So tonight, that was another presidential debate. And CNN, they put this on their scroll. Less than 7 weeks away from the first vote. I can't believe it's that close. It's just amazing. All right. So if people wanted to check out your work and some of the things you're doing, they can just go to your website, rulesanalyst.com.
Yes, indeed.
An expert in panel moderation. You hear her on the show after the debates, and Man, they've had a lot of them. RulesAnalyst.com is where you can find
Chris. You know what, Ryan? There's a lot more.
I know. They're really milking this. And, you know, why not, I guess? They got the airtime. I know they like the getting their face in front of cameras. So I guess it's a win-win situation for them in this case. And they're going to keep dwindling it down. You know, you see the debate stage was at one time up to 20, then 15, then 10. Now it's down to 7. So when
they're talking about December being even more.
Yeah, or next month,
so
is it January?
I think the numbers are actually going to go up in, you're right, January. I think they're going to go up in January.
Wow. Kristen Arnold, thank you so much for spending time with us here on Overnight America.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. RulesAnalyst.com is where you can find her, and she joins us on the Quiver River Electric KMOX guest line.
Now back to Overnight America on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
So what should I do for the last hour that'll be on the air on KMOX this year? What should I do? I mean, we have another hour to go. We're live up until midnight. And then afterwards, we have the replay hours between midnight and 2 a.m. It's our interview with Larry Rice, who spent an extra hour with us than what we were anticipating. We did a lot. I mean, it still frustrates me that we have people that want to help with homelessness. Someone who has been helping with homelessness for 40 plus years. I didn't realize it was in the 70s. I thought it was in the 80s that thing opened. In the 70s. And the city's fighting him. Fighting him. He just wants to help the homeless. Are you kidding me? So frustrating. So he talks about his efforts. It's been about a year since we've had him in. So he gives an update there. And we had a lot of people call in to give comment on that and ask questions. So that's going to be a great replay hour after midnight. But we're going to keep the phone lines open. We haven't really taken any calls outside of the issue of homelessness in that first 2 hours. So you know what? After tonight, I am on vacation until 2020. So if you want to, call in, hang out the next hour. Let's do that. The phone number is 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. You can call in that first line, too. You know, look, I had a good time these last 3 hours, but let's make this last one count. I guess we can talk Christmas. We can talk New Year. We can talk radio. There was a couple of radio stories in the news, too. I was really looking forward to those radio stories, mostly because I am a radio guy. And whenever radio comes up in the news, it's like, I got to talk about it, right? Or not. It's really what you want to talk about this last hour. You know, basically, I will dance for you if you want me to. You know, I am at your disposal. It's Overnight America, KMOX.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.